The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we discuss AHT reverse splits, then dive into reverse splits in general, large cap splits, and talk about stocks that are heavily filled with retail traders.
Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav in the building for the Atlas crew.
Atlas Trading, what the f*** is up?
They're traders, they're prodigies, and then there's legends.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%
by the f***ing dip.
Hey, who told me about IDEX?
Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, someone just made, like, a lot more money than me on my trade.
You find out, life's this game of pennies.
Did you check the portfolio?
Pennies.
The margin for error is so small.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
And they out there making money right now off of penny stocks.
The two guys is putting in work to make y'all rich.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Time to think big.
Pennies going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity It Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
And we have producers too. Today's episode of Pennies Going in Raw is brought to you by Benzinga. Benzinga is our absolute favorite resource to use to trade with. We use it for charts and news and scanners. Look, guys, we use it for everything except for buying and selling stocks. I mean, that's all there is to it. And if you're not using Benzinga Pro, which you can get for 2 weeks free at pro.benzinga.com, that's pro.benzinga.com, you should at least be checking out their YouTube channel every single day, youtube.com/Benzinga. They have Hot Stocks Lukes and a just plethora of fantastic guests, from me and Hugh to Mia Khalifa to Ripster to CEOs of companies to CEOs of Webull. They have it all, guys. Make sure you check it out. That's youtube.com/Benzinga. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Wednesday, July 7th. This week has been, it's been something. You've seen some knives, and it keeps going back to how it's been the past 3-4 weeks. You know, we had it super hot after that crazy downtrend, and now it's, you have a hot day, you have a knife day. Should we just play the good days, and then the very next day we just take the day off?
I mean, that's similar to what I do now with my months. For instance, I had a really good June, so the end of the month, with some of the stuff I played smaller size. And I mean, I got killed on some of the stuff that I played, but thank God, because if I went in full size, I would have destroyed like half my P&L. But in doing so, it really didn't take out that much P&L. So that's similar to what I've been doing, but instead of day by day, month by month.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of tough to talk about the market when all you really see is these up, downs. You see a sector for a day, they can't really pin anything down. Have you really noticed any sector that's stayed? I mean, you'll see like IPOs come in every now and then, and it just seems like everyone wants to play those. But, you know, what sector have you noticed that's been here and has stayed through these kind of up and down market?
Yeah, you know, I really thought that weed was going to stay, and EVs. I thought that they were going to stay as well. And I mean, I'm looking at SNDL, and SNDL is down, you know, from $1 to 80 cents inside the past like few days. And I mean, all the entire weed sector is down. So those are kind of like stable sectors where anytime that they get news, they run, you know, it's like a pretty stable sector. So to see them getting hit is kind of a sign to me that, okay, hey, what we're seeing now with the swings, especially, is that yes, we're having big pops, but everything else is still feeling that downward pressure. So a lot of people a lot of people think that this is like new, but this is actually how it used to be. And that's why managing your positions is so important, because most people are probably red on swing positions until you get the news that you're waiting for, if that makes sense. So we are having really good runners, but we're still feeling that pull down inside the small cap market, which, you know, if you want your stocks cheap, it's good. But if you don't manage your positions correctly, if you take too much size on your first go around, if you don't have a plan, then you're going to get killed. This is definitely the market for 1,000 cuts to the portfolio. And that's what can kill people, especially on the swinging side. On the day trading side, we're still seeing really good momentum, but we're seeing more trends where after 9:45, 10 a.m., things are starting to die off. Or, you know, get the pop open and then drop. So don't get caught inside that pop, you know, buying that pop thinking that, oh, shoot, it's blasting off without me. Instead, especially while we're during the summer, because even though the summer has been relatively hot comparative to, we probably should see somewhat of a slowdown for the next like month. In fact, I would want that maybe like from mid-July to the end of August, probably a little bit slower, and then heat up into the fall. And so that being said, you know, this is going to be, if that does in fact happen, and really there's no sectors and things like that, then what we need to do is that we need to be really smart about our positions, and our number one goal has to be protect capital. So we have to go from building the account up, so that I kind of think of it like building the account up, you know, moderate growth, and then just protecting the capital and keeping the lights on. And that's where, if the market really starts to slow down, that's where we need to transition to.
Okay, well, one thing I think everyone is pretty pissed off about is a good way to say it. You know, the FinTwit CEO hero, it seemed, the Rob guy of AHT, you know, Zach called that around $2 or $3, ran all the way to $7 or $8. And a lot of it was fun with it, because the CEO was communicating. No one believed it was actually him. He unbuttoned his shirt to like give the big reveal, like, hey, it's me. You know, I'm a dude's dude. And I'm here with y'all. I love the investors. And then he pops out and does a reverse split on a Friday afternoon. It was crazy. I wasn't in it at this time, but what did you think about? Because, you know, one thing Zach was vocal about was, you know, hey, this is my plan, but I'm holding it to 10. He's like, do whatever y'all want, but I'm holding it to 10. Obviously, it doesn't get to 10 because of this reverse split, which no one can expect. Is this one of those things where you go back and say, fundamentally, I don't trust this company anymore because of this?
Yeah, well, actually, I would have been okay with a reverse split, but the same guy
overreaction was crazy.
The overreaction is crazy, and I'm even looking at it now. It's like 238, which is still higher than Zach called it. But the one thing that I will say, the CEO was our hero, and everybody enjoyed his openness and his willingness to be transparent and everything. That being said, for him to come on Twitter, and I mean, we've talked about this, but I hate when CEOs start tweeting about shorts. I think it's the dumbest thing in the world. Focus on your company. Like,
not the stock.
Yeah. Your stock will follow. Your stock will follow. You want to know something interesting? Jeff Bezos, on his first annual shareholder letter, sent inside the letter, literally said, don't quote me directly, but the gist of it is that if you were in this for a quick buck, sell your shares, because this is the long game.
The Mark Randolph from the Netflix episode even mentioned that.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, if one of these small cap CEOs sent out a shareholder letter that said, if you're in it for a quick game, sell your shares, everyone would sell their shares.
Yeah, everyone would sell their shares. Well, see, I think, okay, so there's two things that went into this, okay? And thank you, Mark Randolph, for the quote, because I think about the Bezos quote like probably three times a day about the shareholder letter. And I've used it like multiple times for the past 2 weeks. That being said, I enjoy transparent CEOs, but with the understanding that they are salesmen. I like them on Twitter. I think it's a fantastic tool. That being said, tell me how many hotels you've sold or how many books you're booking out. All right. Don't tell me that we got to squeeze the shorts. That's not your job. Okay. That's not, the stock price is a reflection of your business. Okay. If your business knocks it out of the park, your stock price will reflect it. So one thing that I did want to move to is I'm reading the press release, an update on Ashford Hospitality's trust reports year on year rise in preliminary revenue per available room. So I just want to read this one part. Okay. Ashford Hospitality reported Tuesday preliminary revenue per room available of about $91 for June, an increase of about 256% from a year earlier. Okay, that sounds great. Then you read the second sentence and it says, but down 37% from June 2019. That's horrible. To be down 40%, you know, you could say pre-COVID, but to be down 40% from pre-COVID, I mean, that's a fundamental breakdown inside the company. So, you know, the CEO was really chippery on Twitter until it came to, hey, why the hell is the revenue down 37% from pre-COVID? Like, we're like, COVID's open, like we're good to go. Okay, we could see some kind of a slump, but 37% is not like a 10% slump. Even a 20% slump, you can make an excuse for. But coming up on 40%, that's when it's like, okay, you worried about the shorts. Now your business, like, hey, listen, you, if you want to talk about the shorts and then you come out here and you say that, you know, you're up 500% since pre-COVID, fine. But if you're going to come out here blaming the shorts and talking about the shorts and then come out and your business is down 40% pre-COVID, now I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing, it's very reminiscent of Chamath's I'm about to fuck some shit up.
Yeah. Tweet,
and then every single SPAC went down like 80%.
That's a really good comparison. I was trying this morning when we were talking about this, I was trying to think of a comparison, and that's that's insane.
That's the one.
Yeah. That's definitely the one. Yeah. And I mean, like, yeah, I mean, no CEO.
And he also went from the hero of FinTwit to the Chamath, what are you doing, bud?
Dude, I honestly, one of the things that I think about doing sometimes is like selling like an investor relations kit to like companies. Like don't let your CEO tweet about shorts, you know, like
anything.
Just, yeah, don't like
keep his ass off social media.
Show me a picture of the family on July 4th picnic in a PGIR shirt, you know, like show me like, oh, hey, you bought a cool car. Great. You know, like something like
as
that.
As long as it wasn't with the company's
yes.
money.
Yes. No. This had to be from your wife's salary or something. Or from the non-CEO.
You got it for
spouse.
On Father's Day from your rich kids.
Yeah. You know, or hey, you're at a board meeting and you take a picture with Cheryl, you know? Like that's what I want to see. I don't want that. I don't want that nonsense. So that's a really good comparison. That being said, AHT, I haven't been able to do tons of research. But if there is like an actual reason behind the revenue being down 40% from June 2019, I'll be intrigued, because after the reverse split, if we get a pullback, then that can be something that's a low float that, you know, if they have enough cash and I can kind of put my hat on something, meaning that I can say, okay, their revenue was down because of this and they're going to fix this, then I would be able to say, okay, this could be a great opportunity. But if we take a look and it's just revenue's down 40% and nobody has an answer, the CEO that tweeted 25,000 tweets doesn't have an answer, you know, then we might move on.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess moving on from AHT and getting into reverse splits and splits in general, I guess starting with reverse splits, I mean, you see it screw up OTC plays all the time and small caps. Are they always bad? Are they good? I mean, I think just kind of getting into them. So I think, first of all, just explaining what they are. You know, if you have a reverse split, your thousands of shares may turn into 10 shares if it's 100-to-1 split. And that, you know, you still have the same equity in them, assuming
the price is the same, which it won't be. and you know, there are some extra tidbits. I remember when my account was very small, I was wondering, I did the math. I was like, there's no way I should be down $82 today. I should be down $42 today. There's a reverse split fee. But I complained and I got it back. That was like two years ago. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, hey, what the hell? And they sent it back. They were like, dude,
this hustler.
They were like, this kid's losing so much money. We got to keep him.
That's too funny.
But so, you know, I guess in small caps, it always seems like it's bad news bears whenever it's a reverse split and it's, you know, a scummy thing to do. When is it good? Why is it good? When is it bad? Why is it bad? And why do companies do them in general?
So, yeah, so we'll talk about reverse splits. I also want to talk about forward splits because I think that's important as well. We don't really see that inside small cap world as often. And honestly, we don't really see it too often inside large caps. But this year, it feels like everybody and their mother's doing a forward split. You know, you had Apple do it. You had Tesla do it. There's been rumors for 3 months that Amazon's going to do it. And I think eventually they will do it. Another company that does it is Disney. But first, we'll talk about reverse splits because that's what we see way more often. A reverse split, think about it when you're taking the two shares and combining them to make a bigger share. So, for instance, I have two pizzas. I put them together and make like a massive pizza. Okay, there's a few reasons that companies do this. One is if they're not in compliance. So on the NASDAQ, if you're listed on the NASDAQ, you need to be above a dollar per share minimum. Okay, so that means that obviously the price has to be above a dollar. If it goes underneath a dollar, you get 90 days and then you file like two extensions. And that if you still are underneath that dollar, they'll delist you. So a way that some small caps will get above that dollar per share mark is they'll do a reverse split. So some quick math here. If we have 100 shares at 50, let's call it 60 cents, okay? If you do a reverse split for 2-to-1, now you'll have, when I say 100 shares, now you'll have 50 shares at $1.20. So it's supposed to be the same amount of equity, just you're reducing the share price. I mean, you're reducing the amount of shares and increasing the share price, okay? Now, we've seen some companies do 80-for-1 splits. I mean, that's absurd. That's just absurd. So I want to be careful here because you don't want a company doing a reverse split, okay? You don't. But that being said, sometimes it's necessary. Like I said, for the uplisting. Another reason is, for instance, if you have a company, let's just say that there's a hostile takeover on a small cap, and the CEO or the board or whoever is in charge wants to change something about the company. Okay. Someone who we had a conversation with recently was the CEO of DPW. Okay. He had to do a reverse split because he wanted to change some things fundamentally about the company. And the only way to get there was by doing the reverse split. So think of it this way. If someone comes into the company and they're like, what the hell is this? And they want to clean it up. Sometimes it's necessary to do a reverse split. It's not, I would definitely stay away from reverse splits, but in some instances it can be, it needs to be utilized. Now, when I first started trading, it was like a common thing that companies that would do reverse splits would then come out and they would do reverse splits, and then they would also drop news with it. Like, that was like the theme, okay? Reverse split and then news. And I mean, they would go 200-300% because these companies would lower their floats, okay? Obviously, with the reverse split, you know, like I said, you lower the shares. So if you have 100 million shares outstanding, or, you know, the float is 100 million, and you do a 2-for-1 split, now your float is 50 million. But some of these companies would do like a 50-for-1 reverse split, and now the float is 2 million. So now the thing flies up and down. Like I was saying, is that the common theme when I first started trading was reverse split and like contract news. So reverse splits were actually bullish for a little bit there. And I don't mean like bullish. I mean like bullish how offerings were bullish last year. You know, like the first time that I heard that an offering was a good thing, I was like, what? or you know, not an offering, but like an offering 40% at a 40% discount was a good thing. I was like, is this insane? And then it ended up being like a theme for a little bit. So that was the theme when I first started trading. It's definitely moved away from that. The other thing to keep in mind is that most mergers actually put in a clause for reverse splits. So sometimes, like, that's why you really have to understand mergers, or you have to talk to somebody that understands the mergers, because there can be so many little clauses inside a merger that if you don't understand that, hey, they're going to do a reverse split the second that it gets approved, they're going to do a reverse split at, you know, some shitty price and discount and everything, then, you know, that screws over shareholders. And if you don't read that inside the merger, or you don't understand that, it doesn't matter what the valuation is if the thing tanks. Now, if you're an investor, different story. But as traders, you know, because we are traders, you know, I mean, that would screw you.
Before we go on to just regular splits, I think what would be funny is, you know, how you just mentioned how offerings, you know, were something to buy, almost bullish, is if kind of how retail traders pissed off the hedge funds with GameStop and AMC. Every time we get bad news, we just buy it up. We just buy. Bad news is now bullish, and we just buy in short sleep. They're like, what? They won't even know what's going on. I just also got a tweet, because I tweeted that we were recording this PGIR. Someone said, you're talking about the pump and dump that was AHT. Interesting. Yeah, the people that called AHT, they actually planned this reverse split. And yeah, like, what a dumb take. What a silly thing to say.
I really think that at this point, like, I just block people that talk nonsense like that. Like, you're a trader, okay? Like, you're going to call Amazon a pump now that it broke through all-time highs? Like, it's just stupid. It's stupid. It's just so stupid. I have no words, but it's just so stupid. I mean, and you look like a fool. You look like a fool when you talk nonsense like that. It just looks so stupid. Now, moving on to forward splits.
Just splits or forward splits?
Forward splits.
Okay.
So this is what Tesla did, okay, earlier in the year. I forget the exact numbers that they were doing, but this is what Tesla did. This is what Apple did. The Disney has done it in the past, but they haven't done it inside the past year. It's been rumored that Amazon is going to do it, or like it's been rumored for like 4 months that Amazon's going to do it. And I think that this is a perfect time for Amazon to do it. Not only because I have calls, but also because they just broke through resistance. They have a new CEO. They have a new CEO. The CEO, like, basically founded AWS, or he was like the point man for AWS, which is crazy. So, you know, this might be like the time to do it for Amazon. So a forward split is when you take one share and you turn it into two. So let's just say it's a 1-for-2 at $1,000 a share. Okay. Now you're going to get your one share at $1,000 a share is now going to become two shares at $500 a share. Okay. And effectively what this does is that this is making it cheaper.
So yeah, just for the listeners, a forward split is the same as a split. So a stock split, yeah. You know, a Tesla did a 5-for-1 stock split. If it was $1,000, then they were each worth $200. And, you know, going back to that, my dad mentioned it to me, and I was like, nah, I don't think this is a bullish guy. I think it's going to drop. And it did drop, and then it went like back to what it was before the split. Like, it went that five times.
Well, because it comes down to like a supply and demand thing. Okay. Think about it this way. If Amazon goes back to 300, I mean, if Amazon doubles from here, it'll be nearing $8,000 a share, which is just insane. But if they're at $300 a share, then that makes it a little more appealing to regular retail investors. Which brings me to my point about Disney. Did you know that Disney actually keeps their share price intentionally low so that the same people that come to the parks can invest inside the company? I didn't know that, but I found that out recently, that they'll intentionally do splits, and they'll intentionally keep the stock, like, you know, somewhere somewhere, something cheap, you know, like they're not trying to run the stock to $5,000 a share. You know, they'll do a forward split for, or they'll do a split, they'll do a split. And so they do that because they want people who are invested to come to the, or, you know, people that love Disney, eat, breathe, you know, love Disney, to buy the stock as well. So, that's a little tidbit for you, that Disney keeps their stock price cheap on purpose.
Oh, well, hell yeah. Go Disney. Keep it affordable and keep everyone going to your little meetings. So I guess, like, whenever, I mean, the past couple times we've seen splits from these large cap companies, and I've only been paying attention to the massive, massive companies, you know, with, like we mentioned, the Amazons, the Teslas. Is it always, I mean, was it just due to the timing and it was such bullish, especially because it just seems like SPY's been ramping up, large caps are going hard. Is that just the explanation behind that? Or has it always been split seem to be kind of a bullish symbol?
It really depends. It really does depend. Again, I think that a lot of it comes down to the intentions and the underlying equity. So what I mean by that is that, like, is if AHT did a reverse split, but then they came out and they were like, oh, you know, our revenue's up 800% from pre-COVID, you know, then it's like, done. You know, like, let's get the ball rolling. But instead, it felt pretty scummy because you had a CEO coming out saying that, you know, that they didn't, that he was doing this so that the shares were cheaper. I mean, that the shares were more expensive, you know, said they could squeeze short. I didn't remember what he was talking about, but it was just like a, like, it just didn't feel right. You know, like, it just didn't feel right. And then on top of that, you know, I think it really does come down to the intention. Like Apple, for instance, okay. Apple has more cash. Apple has insane, you know, they're always innovating, they're acquiring companies, they're, you know, coming out with new technology all the time, you know, the AirTags, the new AirPods, new Macs, new desktops. So there's like a thing there, like, okay, hey, the split is now coming lower, so if I can get it for $200 a share, you know, there's no way that this thing doesn't go to 400, because Apple's underlying equity or underlying business is just improving. So this is a fantastic time to buy. You know, it's like a second chance. But inside the same token, if the company was trying to get people to buy it by doing the split, so let's just say that they went from 10 to 5, then I think that that's a bad look. That, I mean, if there's like no real reason, you know, like, it comes down to supply and demand. People want Amazon. People want Apple. Because the underlying company is killing it. People don't, you know, if ABCD does $20 million in revenue and they have the $2 billion market cap, nobody's going to be itching to buy that, you know, especially if they do a split from 10 to 5. You know, so I think that for the most part, splits give a unique opportunity when done right to buy, but only when they're done right. Now, if like DoorDash does a forward split, I wouldn't even look twice at it.
One company I really wanted to invest in for a while, but it doesn't even have a stock because it's owned by Google, was YouTube, because I'm always on YouTube, but I can't be a YouTube investor without investing in like all of Google.
Did you see YouTube's founder's only worth like $5 million? I thought he was gonna be worth like $700 million.
Didn't he sell it?
Yeah, he sold it. He sold it like pretty low or something. I mean, listen, $5 million is a lot of money, but everybody.
Sure? I mean, that sounds really low.
Hang on,
YouTube
founder network.
Oh, $140 million.
Wait, I was watching a documentary.
You just talk out of your ass
because he's a skater, right?
I don't know. Well, this is the co-founder. Okay, let's.
Yeah, who's YouTube the actual founder. Guy? Oh, who's the real owner?
Okay. Well, there's three of them. It was like three, because you know why it was made, right? It was so they could share the video of Janet Jackson's boobies.
Are you serious? That's why it was made?
The halftime show.
I had no idea.
The other ones were $355 million, and Steve Chen is worth, let me see. Yeah, dude, you're really wrong on this.
Yeah, I am really wrong on that one. I don't know.
$300 million. Like, none of them have less than $100 million.
Maybe I don't know where I saw that. Wow, I've been telling people that for like a year.
Keep this in. Whoever edits this
one, keep this in. I sound like an idiot now.
The guy that made one of the most heavily trafficked websites of all time.
I swear to God, I was watching something and it said that, like,
dude, Hugh, you could buy YouTube. Just hire him.
That would be sick. All right, well, yeah, okay. Yeah,
well,
that was stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, moving on to the last segment. Stocks that are heavily filled with retail traders. You know, so many of them that FinTwit will get on, and usually sometimes they turn out good, sometimes they don't. You see Fubo, then you see other ones such as like CCIV or Clover. How do you kind of go about those? Do you watch until there's a dip? My personal favorite way is I wait till everyone is saying, man, this is a pump. Man, I should have gotten out. Man, this stock sucks. And they're crying on Twitter. They're blaming the guy that called it 30 cents below. That's when I look for my entry. You know, you're seeing stocks like Wish kind of around 11. And then I think it actually just broke VWAP upwards as we're recording this. So hopefully it gets on a little bullish trend. But, you know, how do you kind of manage those and play them?
Yeah, that's perfect. So I actually bought more Wish today at 11.04, 11.05 is my average. And I thought that this was a perfect example for being able to identify stuff like that. So one thing that you hear a lot inside the FinTwit community is wait till dip buyers become pop sellers. So what that means is that the people that just keep buying the dip. So one of the things that I feel like we try and preach as much as possible is that scale in accordingly. Every 1% doesn't need to be a scale in. Okay. In fact, it should be a gradual scale in. So, because that's one of the toughest things for new traders is that every time that they see red, they want to add. And that's how, you know, and what happens is that you add, and then it dips more. Now, what happens then is when it dips more, when the second that pops, so let's just say that, you know, it goes down 15% and then you, like, you're all in at this point. And then it goes down another 7%. Okay. The next time when it pops up, even if it pops up 5%, most likely that new trader is going to just sell out. Okay. So that's what I mean by when dip buyers become pop sellers. Okay. Buy. Now down huge on the account, like let's call it 15%. And then the second that they see any kind of green, they're like, screw it, just get me out. That's when I like to buy, because, or that's like kind of like my thing. So for instance, Wish. Okay. I was going to buy more Wish yesterday at $12 per share, but you could see it inside the tape that every time, I mean, it was just, I mean, you could have drawn a downtrend on the hour, 20 day hourly. And I mean, it didn't break it it hasn't even broken it yet. And you saw that every time there was getting a pop, people were trying to sell out of it. And so that's fine. You know, that's fine, but that means that you have to be really smart. And what I call is like, kind of like a reactive buy. So the second that you see it kind of like you just see, you can kind of see it in the tape, and I'm going to sound like a crazy person, but you kind of see like the panic in the tape, like everybody trying to get out the door together. You know, everybody's trying to fit through the door and sell. And then you see that one last flush, and then you see that pop back. Okay. So like I said, one last flush, pop back. That's a really good sign that exhaustion's there. So everybody sold and boom, a little bit of buying really popped it back up and wicked the candle. No matter what chart you're looking at, if it wicks back up, that's a pretty good sign of exhaustion, especially if it's on high volume. Even if it's not on high volume, like that's still a really great sign. So for instance, that's kind of what I saw with Wish. And so I still you know, I mean, Wish could still go lower, but I feel really good about buying those at 10.03 because you saw, okay, it hit 10.86 and immediately within 2 minutes, it was back over 10.95, or within like 10 seconds, it was back over 10.95 and within 2 minutes, it was back over 11. So that was a really good, you know, example of you saw like the emotions, you saw the dip buyers become pop sellers. And then, you know, you saw like that last flush and that pop back. And that was a nice scale in spot. And now I'm up like, you know, what is this, like 20 cents a share right now or something?
Yeah, so I guess whenever there are so there, you have to use technicals a lot on these. And you also have to understand there are a lot of people in here, and a lot of them may be new traders. they're full of retail traders for a reason. And it's because they're, you know, they're being talked about a lot, and sometimes good, sometimes not. But you have to look at the fundamentals behind the company, and before entering, definitely scale in, definitely use the technicals, and you got to chart as much as you can for those to pay off as much as you can. I mean, you see some do a lot better than others, and you see some traders trade them perfectly, and that's really where you want to be at. To kind of finish this out, I did get a tweet in the middle of the episode. Someone was asking, whenever someone says they're going to nibble at a wall, percent or total cash on the street, how much is that? So that if like the stock in play at hand that has been called and in front of me on my monitors, what percent do traders feel comfortable nibbling? You know, it can vary on size and everything. But I think, first of all, you have to look at the wall. You open up level two, you see how big the wall is. Let's say it's at a big resistance or it's about to be at $10 or $20. If they have the account size that can break it, I mean, that is going to be such a moving number for this because one, a small account's not going to be able to break a wall. Two, I don't think you can say it's a percent. I wouldn't be breaking walls that I see I could break with more than 3 to 5% of my account, which is still aggressive. I mean, because if I'm breaking a wall, I imagine I'm already in at a lower point. I've got a good entry. Is breaking this wall going to make it break out to a point where spending that much of my account was worth it and that I can still get out?
No. So there's two ways that I really utilize walls. One is that now that my account is really starting to really build up, I use a wall as a scaling point because I can't just, you know, sometimes on some of these stocks, you can't just buy. You know, I mean, if you have like there was one stock that I went, what was it, that we were playing on Wednesday today? It was, NUGG or something. And I was trying to put, this thing, or VPRX, you know, that thing was halting up like 4 or 5 times. And so things that are halting, you can't really take size or else like you could potentially halt it yourself. So if there's a wall there though, I mean, that's a really, it can just be like a share exchange. You know, if there's like 100,000 share wall, it can literally just be like a share exchange.
You're willing to sell this, I'm willing to buy it.
Exactly. Like literally just great. You know, let's boom right there. You know, I'll take it right there. So that's one way that I'll use it. If you really want to scale in, but you can't, but you don't feel like there's size. The other way to utilize a wall is that walls can really make, you know, kind of think about it like, when you're bench pressing and you kind of hit like that plateau and you're like struggling. And then you push through it. And then all of a sudden you're like, boom. And you really fly the weight up. That's similar to the wall, because when you're trying to break through it, once you're through it, it can give an explosion to the upside. The other thing that a wall does is that it can create support. You know, if let's just say that there's a really big wall there. The example that I'm going to use is GNUS about 4 or 5 months ago. GNUS had like a 200,000 share wall. And I mean, it was pretty pricey at that spot. So like that was like a few million dollars, I believe. And all like for 2 days, it would come up to the wall. It would take down some of the wall and then it would grind back down for the rest of the day. And then it would come back up, retest it. And so what it was doing is that even though the wall didn't break for 2 days, and even though there was like, you know, like a 3 or 5% range for the, for those days, what happened was that it was creating a resistance point, but that resistance point was only a wall, you know, like it wasn't like some crazy resistance point. So when it finally broke through and it retested down, you know, that was the new support. So walls also act, you know, although they act as resistance, resistance becomes support.
All right. Well, that sums it up for today's episode. We have some big announcements coming up and we're really excited to give them to you. But before we can do that, make sure to rate us 5 stars, like us on Spotify, and be nice to us on Twitter. We love you guys and we'll see you on Sunday. Yeah, please be nice. We're really sensitive. And this episode was sponsored by Manscaped. Make sure to go to manscaped.com and use PGIR for all of your manscaping needs. And that'll give you 20% off and free shipping. But let me tell you about their packages for your package. I mean, they have it all. They got the lawnmower. They got the weed whacker. They've got Reviver and Revitalizer. It gets your stuff smelling great, looking great for any occasion. And you never know when that occasion is going to happen. So you got to make sure to order Manscaped using code PGIR and be ready for any occasion.